Keelan, I don't know if you can hear me, but I can't hear anybody in the chambers. I see Commissioner Hardesty has her mic unmuted.
Commissioner Maps, we haven't started yet.
Okay.
Oh, I need to bring up the right screen here. I got the wrong one. Take the cap off. We made it. Here we are. This is the Wednesday, December 7th, afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon, Max.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan. Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the City Council agenda on Council Clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Our one item for this afternoon is 1033, non-emergency ordinance.
Amend motor vehicle fuels code to increase the minimum content requirements for biofuels and add a carbon intensity standard to ensure lowest carbon fuels are sold in the city of Portland.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're here today to once again discuss a proposal from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability related to the use of renewable diesel fuels here in the city of Portland. As a reminder, on November 16th, we heard a presentation from staff. We heard from some invited testimony. We took public testimony and we had a variety of questions for staff as well as some of our guests. At the end of the meeting, we continued the item to today to allow for any potential amendments to come forth. Today, we're going to hear a brief follow-up presentation from staff, open it up for any last questions or discussion from members of the Portland City Council, and potentially vote on the ordinance. With that, Commissioner Rubio, I'll turn it over to you to introduce the item and our presenters today.
Thank you, Mayor. Today is a momentous day in Portland's climate history.
Portland was the first city to pass a renewable fuel standard in 2006. And since then, the RFS has helped grow a local supply of biodiesel and transformed our local fuel market. In fact, Portland's RFS was so successful that Oregon adopted the same 5% biodiesel standard statewide in April of 2011. The code update before us has been more than 2 years in the making. Staff have done a meticulous and thorough job of researching, collaborating, engaging, and responding to stakeholder feedback. And as a result of this work, this proposal is credible and well-grounded in data analysis and expert input. In our last hearing, we heard some testimony about concerns about predicting future markets. And while we fully acknowledge the uncertainty of predicting the future of fuel markets, I'm confident that the Interim Rule Authority and the Technical Advisory Committee provide the appropriate structures and processes to ensure that the city is transparent, accountable, and well-informed, and is able to act nimbly in response to market conditions. Colleagues, this is the most important and meaningful climate and health legislation that the City Council has passed for at least 4 years. And now today, we have an important moment here to show that the Climate Emergency Work Plan is not just words on paper. I've asked staff to come back to give us a quick summary of the main questions that came up from council offices after the last hearing. But before I call up the director, I would like to introduce an amendment. This item was continued after the November 16th public hearing to allow for time and space for questions and discussion. And the important discussions have happened, all the questions have been answered. So therefore, I would like to move agenda item 1033 forward today to allow BPS to get started on implementation. And in particular, we must get the Technical Advisory Committee up and running in response to the stakeholders' urgency and concerns. So therefore, I'm proposing an amendment to add an emergency clause to the ordinance, which will allow council to vote on this item today.
Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Hardesty seconds. Any further discussion on the amendment? Call the roll on the amendment.
Maps.
Aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.
Great. Thank you, colleagues. So now I will call up Director Donnie Oliveira from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and as well as Andrea Tahir to start us off. Thank you both.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm going to hand this over to Andrea real quick. So I want to take this moment to briefly thank you all. Thank your staff. And thank the stakeholders that have had a chance to work with us over the past 2 years, and in particular, the groups that have engaged with us over the last 6 months to get this council proposal and vote today. I know you all are juggling an incredible amount of important items, and the fact that you and your staff took the time to dive into the complex issue that we're bringing to you for vote shows your clear demonstration of climate leadership. So thank you for that. And the last thing I want to acknowledge and make sure it's absolutely clear to everyone, we will continue to work with our business partners and community to ensure that this policy meets its goals while ensuring that no one is disproportionately harmed by the policy. We want to ensure that the policy implementation is clearly demonstrating a commitment to our climate goals, our health goals, but also ensuring that no businesses are inadvertently put out of business. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Andrea to start the presentation to answer the questions that you all posed last session. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Andrea Jacob. I am the Program Manager for Climate Policy and Programs at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So the Renewable Fuel Standard, just for a quick refresher, is the city code that regulates the blending or mixing of renewable fuel with fossil fuels. The code changes being proposed today apply to diesel fuel sales only and do not ban the use of diesel in Portland. So people will still be able to drive their diesel vehicles. What we are doing is changing the composition of the fuels that are sold at the pump over time. Next slide, please. Just want to, I know you all know this, but just very quickly what the code changes are we are proposing to phase in higher blends of renewable fuels between 2024 and 2030. So at full implementation, we'll replace 99% of petroleum diesel with blends of renewable diesel and biodiesel. It's a fuel neutral approach, so the market will decide what the best and most cost effective blends are to sell. The main thing that we've done with this is add a carbon intensity standard, and obviously this is the part of the policy that you've probably heard the most about and has gotten the most concern and questions from stakeholders. The point of the carbon intensity standard is to ensure that we attract the lowest carbon fuels to the market. And, you know, we've heard conflicting testimony. The truth is that fuel markets are very volatile and hard to predict, and we know that for a fact. We know that around fossil fuel as well. What we do know for sure is that the interim rule authority and the process established by the technical advisory committee will give us the most real-time information from which to make changes to the policy as needed. And what I'd like to remind council is that we have actually used that interim rule authority with respect to the renewable fuel standard twice in its history. Out of an abundance of caution, the market has adapted to the original RFS, and we're confident the market will adjust to this new policy as well. Next slide, please. To show you what just to remind you what the phase-in schedule is, the current RFS is a 5% blend, but as of 2020, we had 11% biodiesel in the market, so that right now the main fuel is biodiesel. We have 11% right now. In 2024, we're proposing a modest increase to 15%. The first big jump comes in 2026 with that 50% blending requirement, getting to the 99% in 2030. Next slide, please. So we mentioned the technical advisory committee. I just wanted to run through what this flexible and informed implementation looks like. This is all in the ordinance, but just to go through what those stage gates are. We, by July, end of July of next year of 2023, will have established the technical advisory committee. In October of 2025, the TAC will make its first report to BPS. This is 7 months prior to the 50% blending requirement. The blending requirement would then go into effect in mid-2026. And then prior to that, we would report to council. We'd file a report February of 2026. Then in advance of the next stage gate in 2029, the TAC will make a report in October to BPS again 7 months before the 99% blending requirement. BPS reports to council in February. The changes go into effect that May of 2030. Next slide, please. Since there have been so many questions about carbon intensities and fuels and feedstocks and availability, we wanted to just throw a couple of examples up on the, you know, for you to understand the difference between what different fuels at different carbon intensities look like. So in the green, these are examples of renewable diesel that are under that carbon intensity standard that we've proposed of 40. The big difference is that usually the lower carbon intensities are made from waste products or recycled products, whereas the ones that are higher are usually made from virgin oils or agricultural products that come from farther away. So the carbon intensity, it's a life cycle assessment that takes into account all of the factors, including what it starts from, how it's refined, how it gets here, and then combustion. So that CI of 40 is, we're really hoping to keep those virgin products out of the market and preventing these land use changes that happen when you convert food to fuel. Next slide, please. This is the same sort of idea with biodiesel. So you see these lower carbon intensity products are used cooking oil, they're made domestically, they come here by truck, rendered animal fat. And then you see those red ones are 54 and 58 carbon intensity. Those are canola oil and soybean. Again, those agricultural products that are coming into the market. So that's just a little bit of an example of what the carbon intensity looks like for different fuels. Next slide. Yes.
Before you move on, great presentation so far, but it occurred to me. So if we are looking for more climate friendly fuel, and we're getting it from places who are trucking it in, are we requiring those trucks to be environmentally climate friendly?
Kind of how that's accounted for is if all the emissions from that transportation are figured in. So if it's an electric vehicle, they're gonna get a lower carbon intensity. So it's already sort of factored in to that carbon intensity value. And that's a value that's assigned by the Department of Environmental Quality. So they're looking at a number of different factors. So the mode of transportation absolutely has an effect on what that CI is. So higher emissions transportation is gonna get a higher carbon intensity value. Does that make sense?
Thank you. No, that was, I like that. Thank you.
Next slide, please. So we've also heard concerns about, is there going to be enough of this stuff here in the future. I wanted to just show a little bit about what's here now. And again, these are DEQ data. So right now we can't know what the exact volumes are of supply by vendor because that's proprietary, but we do know what vendors have gotten approval from DEQ. And it's a rigorous process, so they don't go through that unless they're intending to bring their fuel to market. So right now we have 27 approved renewable diesel products in Oregon, and 20 of those, or 74%, are at or below a 40 CI. In addition, we know that in all of 2021, the average of all of the fuel of all of the renewable diesel in Oregon by volume was a 36.98, so well under that 40 CI. And there, these are the vendors on the slide that have those approved pathways, and the parentheses is the number of products that they have approved. So that those are the 20 that are at a CI of 40 or below. Next slide, please. And this is just similar information for biodiesel. We have many more approved products. There are 59 approved biodiesel products in Oregon, and 38 of those are at or below a 40 CI. And those are some of the names of the companies that provide those. So just to conclude why we're doing this, Commissioner Rubio already talked about this, but diesel is our fourth largest source of carbon emissions and a major contributor to diesel particulate matter. It's rare that we get to bring a policy that does so much good on carbon and on air quality. And it is a moment that will put Portland back in the position as a climate leader. So thank you so much.
Does that complete that your entire presentation? Yes. Very good. All right. And this is a second reading, so we don't have, or this is a continuation, correct, Keelan? We continued?
No, we've added the emergency clause, which we voted on.
So it is a second reading, but we don't have testimony today then?
Right, just no testimony.
Okay,
no
good. Testimony. Colleagues, any further questions? We'll take a final vote on the ordinance as amended. Please call the roll.
Maps.
I want to thank Commissioner Rubio for bringing this item forward. I also want to express my appreciation for staff at planning for their really exemplary work in pulling together this truly cutting edge ordinance. The devil will be in the details, and I think flexibility and evaluation as we move forward is quite important, but I have confidence in the ordinance that we have today. I believe that this is one of the most important steps the city will make in terms of fighting climate change, which is why I am glad to vote aye.
Rubio.
As a city, we have committed and recommitted to transition away from fossil fuels to a clean and decarbonized energy future, and this policy is what the clean energy transition looks like. Yes, it is complex and involves many stakeholders and perspectives, some of which conflict, but I believe with all my heart that this policy will make Portland cleaner, healthier, and more resilient, less dependent on fossil fuels, and more independent from the global conflict and suffering that they cause. With this vote, we can put Portland back into the limelight as a climate leader. These moments to make a difference for climate do not come along very often, so we should continue to be bold and unafraid. And speaking of bold, I want to give the biggest appreciation that I can to our excellent team, Donnie, Andrea, Kyle, Pam, and other BPS staff who've worked hundreds and hundreds of hours on this project, researching and working with stakeholders to get this right. Because similar to what we heard earlier in these chambers this morning, sometimes you only get one shot to get it right when it comes to people's lives. So I wanna say thank you, mil gracias, for getting this right, for your dedication, and for living your values in your work. I'm very, very proud to be here with you today, and it's an incredible, incredible honor for me to work alongside all of you in this accomplishment. And congratulations on this excellent work. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio, for your steadfast and unwavering leadership to bring forward a renewable fuels policy that not only better aligns Portland with its climate action plan, but also sends a signal to industry that the green economy is viable, prosperous, and we are leaning into it with action. Additionally, I want to thank you, Director Daniel Oliveira, Andrea Jacobs. You guys really have, and your staff, you've fielded a lot of questions from me and from our staff. We're kind of a curious bunch. We're lifelong learners, and I really appreciate how you've just hung in there and answered all of our questions. it's really important that we achieve our carbon emissions and clean air goals. There's no doubt in my mind that we must accelerate our investments in the green economy, advancing policy and programs to reduce local fossil fuel use, both in the city's own operations and through community-wide initiatives, and deliver on these climate goals. This is Portland taking action. You know what you want by what you do. And here's what we're doing. We're sending the clear signal to the market that the status quo is not acceptable and we can do better. I'm a really firm believer that when there is a demand, the supply shows up. And therefore, after many meetings and long, challenging, but productive conversations, I'm happy that we have arrived on the other side of this conversation with action that will advance the city's vision of environmental stewardship while also ensuring a smooth transition into the greener fuel economy. With these specific bold actions, there is still time to ensure the best case scenario for Portland in a changing climate. This ordinance is just one of many steps along the path to operationalize the city's climate action plan to reduce carbon emissions by 40% in 2030, which is really soon. The time is ticking. Let's go. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Commissioner Rubio has shown that she's a climate champion from the day she has showed up here at City Hall. And I'm really grateful for her leadership that doesn't allow climate policy to just kind of sit and gather dust. She has actually hired some incredible leaders like Diney, and I'm so sorry, I forgot your name again.
Andrea,
both of you, I could tell when she was speaking, Andrea, your passion for climate justice. And I just think it's remarkable to know in such a short period of time, I see the kind of synergy around who we will be as leaders in climate mitigation and how we will make sure that we will not just be a city that talks about climate change, but actually does something about it. And so I am confident that with Commissioner Rubio's leadership and a solid team that she has gathered around her, that this is just the beginning of us having a huge impact on making our climate more resilient and more just and more fair for more Oregonians. I'm happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I would agree with my colleagues. This is as monumental as it is meaningful. And I want to recognize and appreciate that several years of hard work went into this ordinance that we're voting on today. Commissioner Rubio, thank you for your leadership. It's great to have something positive that we can talk about. A lot of the decisions we make here, no matter what we do, it's unpopular. And this is one that will require some balance. There are undoubtedly some people we heard them come and they took the time to testify and provide really good input feedback to us, who will undoubtedly feel that this is an overreach. But I actually believe you struck a fine balance here. And the issue, of course, is one that's extremely important. There are costs to this ordinance, and we can't fool ourselves and pretend that there aren't. But the benefits far outweigh those costs, in my opinion. I want to thank everybody at BPS, Donnie, Andrea, everybody at BPS who worked so hard on this, and to everyone who weighed in as this proposal was developed. And that is hundreds of individuals, organizations, experts, residents, pretty much everybody had a say in this. And I believe, again, you struck an appropriate balance. For decades, Portland has been shifting towards more climate-friendly forms of transportation. And we see that throughout the work that we do here at the City Council around encouraging our public transit partners to work with us, improving walking and biking infrastructure in our city. And as we look into the future, this proposal is yet another step in the right direction. It will, over the next several years, transition the diesel that's bought and sold in Portland today to cleaner, low carbon fuel. I appreciate the phased-in approach this transition imagines to ensure that the market will be ready in time. And I'm mindful of the fact that we are also asking a lot of our suppliers, our distributors, our retailers in this community. And I believe that we have sketched out an appropriate phased-in approach to ensure that they're working in lockstep with us as we achieve the goals we're seeking to achieve. I also appreciate the proposal for BPS to form a technical advisory committee who can monitor fuel supply and costs and provide advice to BPS and City Council on any changes that might be needed to stabilize the fuel market. We took substantial testimony from people who were concerned about the potential instability in the market or the lack of supply. We've built in this technical advisory committee, and we've given appropriate authority to Bureau leadership to be able to make any tweaks that are necessary to ensure that we don't disrupt that supply. This ordinance points us in a direction that we know that we need to go, and with a great deal of urgency. It's practical, it's the right thing to do, and I strongly support it. I vote aye, and the ordinance is adopted. Thank you all for your hard work. And believe it or not, that concludes this afternoon's session. We are adjourned.